There are other offenses that can lead to the impoundment of the vehicles. Parking in the tow-away zone, ambulance or emergency services area, parking on the red line or non-parking area, vehicles impounded at roadblocks, unroadworthy vehicles, junk driving, illegal street racing, vehicle with missing or false number plates, driving a motor vehicle without a driver's license. We now come to the G's chairperson, the scrapping of vehicles. We need to turn very carefully here. The National Road Traffic Act provides a particular procedure if the motor vehicle has to become permanently unfit for use. We notify the title holder at an appropriate registration authority, complete the form called CNP or MVA-1A within 3 months to indicate that the motor vehicle has become permanently unfit for use. Submit the vehicle registration certificate to the registration authority. Systematic constraints relates to the utilization and non-utilization of the safety belts, which in most instances are those belts that are tied behind the passengers or the drivers. This is particularly in converted panel vans, which are not fitted with seat belts. The illegal administration marks, we have placed them on 2,168 vehicles for illegal conversion. This chair, it's a live data. If you look in terms of the areas deregistered by fault, it's only one. Deregistered by request, it's 835. Exported while exempt from licensing, it's two. Exported while licensed is 27. Licensed, it's 1,154. Pending or stolen or to be demolished is 28. Pending sale, it's 23. Registered, it's 88. Registered liable for license is 10. The total results is 2,168 vehicles. Over 42,000 vehicles in the live vehicle population were introduced to 90s as a panel van. We need to just depose the number that we have just given of 2,600, as well as a total number of 42,000 vehicles that were introduced as panel vans. And we are giving the data there too. The data will then reflect that if you go through the data, that Gauteng is the highest of those vehicles that were introduced. And Gauteng will then be followed by KZN, and KZN will then be followed by Mpumalanga. So the total number is 42,966. The list of those vehicles that were introduced in terms of the system, it's only Northern Cape, which sits at 998. Thank you, Chairperson. I hope I did not disappoint you. As all material time, I honor my chair. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much, CEO. Colleagues, there is the presentation, which we also did have on time, and I hope you did have an opportunity to browse through it, so that as the CEO was going through the presentation, you were able to compare with the notes you would have made. I have made some observations, which obviously I will reserve unless my colleagues have not raised them, then I will raise them at the end. However, colleagues, I want to invite your hands at this point in time, which are already up. The first one is Honorable Hunsinger. He will be followed by Honorable McDonald. And followed by Honorable Nolu Chungu. Whether he has raised his hand or not, after Honorable Nolu Chungu, it will be Honorable Sithole, in that order. Can we have Honorable Hunsinger? The platform is yours, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson, and Good afternoon to the team from RTMC under the leadership of Advocate Msibi. Good to see you, sir. And hi to everybody. It certainly has been a long year without having any personal engagement, because I also always enjoyed having a personal engagement with the team of RTMC. And thank you very much also for the work that you're doing on our roads under difficult circumstances and conditions, given the year that we've had until now. Chairperson, thank you for the presentation and the opportunity to engage with RTMC on this very specific investigation and inquiry. My question would be, based on the last slide, which was slide 26, where you presented us with a spectrum in different categories of suspicious vehicles that might be converted panel vans. Am I hearing you correctly, sir, that you are saying it is impossible to determine the extent in current number of vehicles that have been or might have been converted from panel vans? From the department, we've heard the number of 2,353, whereas reports and all indications are that converted taxis are closer to 6,000 than any number below that, and that we might have as much as 3,000 ambulances. And the department told us that in the engagement with the public protector, the number of 2,353 was mentioned, and that the scope of investigation, therefore, was limited to that and not extended to the number which allegedly I've just quoted now, 6,000 and 3,000. So could you give us your perspectives on that? Then related to the system, the eNATIS system specifically, after giving us insight on who all has access to the system, how is access controlled? Is there an access code which personifies the person entering the system and also thereafter making changes? Related to that, is it possible for someone that does have an access code to then change, for instance, a passenger number limitation of, say, 3 persons to 16? Is it possible to just delete 3 and enter 16? And how is this, how are these changes then managed? In other words, is there a system through which all these changes are checked, whether, in fact, it is legal to have been changed, or allowed to have been changed? Or was that a blind spot in the management system of changes that occurred or might have occurred? How would one on a system registration desk, how would one know the difference between a panel van and a taxi, for instance? How is it reflected in terms of coding and numbers, and how manipulatable are these codes and numbers? And then I would like to know whether you have explored in the eNATIS system how many taxis and how many ambulances do we currently have that might have been converted illegally from panel vans. Then you also mentioned the date of the 5th of April 2017 as the date where RTMC, might I add, finally and ultimately, due to the painful processes that you had to go through in obtaining that, but then took over eNATIS. And you might recall queries during that period from our side as to, you know, the status of the system, you know, and the firewalls built into the system. Was that also the time in 2017 where you for the first time acknowledged and sort of gained the knowledge of that, you know, there are illegal converted panel vans, or illegal converted taxis rather. Chairperson, that would be my questions for now. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Hunsinger. I'm not sure if today I'll be as generous given the time constraints, but we will see how it goes. Honorable McDonald's.
Thank you, Chair. I also want to echo the great warm thank you to the RTMC for their presentation. Chair, through you, I just need some clarity. If a registered manufacturer or importer that has access to the eNATIS system decides to convert a panel van to a passenger vehicle and they are registered on the database, is that vehicle then accepted as a vehicle that is not illegally converted? That's my one question. Then on the table of all the vehicles that have been converted, where we have 42,966 vehicles, I want to understand how a panel van can be registered as a single deck bus versus a combi microbus. I just need some clarity on that. And we can see clearly here that there's many more vehicles that have been converted legally or illegally, and I suspect mostly illegally, due to the fact that you can look at the number of vehicles that are ambulances and rescue vehicles that have been converted. Chair, I also want to raise, and this is something I was going to raise with you, is that if you take 40,000 vehicles roughly, and each one would have brought in 50,000 rand VAT component, and that VAT component has been claimed back because it's a goods vehicle and not a passenger vehicle, which the I've just read that SARS note number 82 says that the onus is ultimately on the taxpayer to show that the vehicle is not wholly and mainly constructed for carriage of passengers. That means that for an argument's sake, how many of these vehicles would not have paid taxes? And we have a serious problem there. That's over 2 billion rand of lost revenue to the fiscus. And Chair, we need to get a final, better understanding of how many vehicles have been actually converted. I mean, there should be a database from Nissan, from Toyota, from the manufacturers on the vehicles that were sold as panel vans out as brand new panel vans, and we have their VIN numbers. Can we not get a list of those VIN numbers and then compare them to the vehicles that are on the road at the moment, and then thus flag those vehicles as illegally converted? Because, I mean, these people are dying, literally dying on the roads, and it's become a problem, and we need to investigate this and even delve much deeper. I was driving behind a truck, a 10-ton truck, that is being converted to a bus to transport workers from Itau Milling. I mean, that truck is registered for 3 passengers, but it can every single day it's conveying 70 passengers from work to home and home to work. And there's no stop in this illegal conversions. They don't just stop at trucks, they don't stop at taxis. It's right through the industry. Everything, Chair, and through you, I think we, as a committee, we need to start taking a serious stance on this. This is not a lawless country. We need to rein in these illegal vehicles. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Nolu Chungu.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the RTMC team for the presentation. What I would like to know is that, how were these illegal vans registered while the certificate indicated that the vehicle is officially allowed to carry only 3 passengers? And what areas of the native systems are editable in the capturing process? And how did the fraudulent registration of these vehicles happen? In your presentation, you are saying that of the 42,000 panel vans identified by natives, it is not possible to determine which conversions are illegal as model certificates are provided for the model. But Section 17 of the NRCS gives you powers to inspect, search, and seize. Why is this not being done? It is very clear that the innate system is not fraud-proof. I mean, you are mentioning that in the Eastern Cape alone, you have 510 people that were arrested for registering illegal vehicles. I have not seen any arrests for the registration of the illegal conversions of these vans. If that has happened, we want to know if you have identified these perpetrators and have you laid any criminal charges against them? If yes, how many and how far is the process? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Noli Chungu. Honorable Sithole.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Mr. Magno. Thank you to the presenter from Advocate Msibi. My question, Chairperson, that first of all, I want to find out, when did the RTMC know that there is an illegally panel vans in their system? If they can just give that, and the other one, Chairperson, that I'm trying to check, how many illegal van, if according to their understanding, illegal panel van that they have issued by the disc for those vans? And the other chairperson, I'm trying to check the 66 officials that are still to be arrested. Do they have the time frame for the arresting of those officials? Are they still in the system, or they have been resigned as other officials have been resigned? And the other one, Chairperson, that I'm trying to check, what will be the procedure that the RTMC will follow for those officials which have been resigned from the system? What is going to happen to those officials that have been resigned from the system? Another Chairperson, I'm trying to check if they are saying the native information are not been lost from their system after they took over from the fifth. Are they sure about that? Are they not going to tell us at a wrong time that there is some information that is been lost on the system? And the last one, Chairperson, that I'm trying to understand is the system, do they have a system, a proper system that they have in the RTCM to now to track the illegal events that they are in our road? And how many illegally panel van have been impounded, if they do have that information? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you very much, colleagues. I hope CEO, all those questions are very clear. I will give you an opportunity to respond to those questions in the best way possible. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Once again, let may express our gratitude in the team and our humility to all the honorable members. We have been missing them and their voices and their wisdom. Finally, we have made it possible, Chair. Chair, I will then allow the team to deal with some of the issues. I will wrap up in terms of the other questions. Kevin?
Good afternoon, members. Yes, let me begin with a bit of a background in terms of the process for the conversion of a panel van into a passenger.
Advocate Msebi?
Chair?
Can we see the face of the person speaking? Not that your face we don't like, but if possible, when the person is responding, if we could see that person. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Is that better, Chair?
Yes, go ahead.
Thanks, Chair.
Hello.
Yes, Chair. So with the conversions of panel vans, the process that is followed is that a specific type of manufacturer, importer, builder has to apply to the NRCS to be a bodybuilder. So they get registered at the province as a bodybuilder, which is a subset of the manufacturers, importers, and builders. And thereafter, they apply to the National Regulator for Compulsory Standards to obtain a model number for that conversion. Now, the Public Protector's Report did highlight some issues, particularly with regard to these Toyota Quantums in terms of the tests that were conducted by the NRCS, which were static tests and not tests in movements that looked at when the vehicle happens to be in an accident where the vehicle rolls and so on. So they did static tests on those vehicles. Now, every single model number that was issued up until then would have followed the same process. It is therefore that we say in our presentation on the 43,000 panel van conversions that are currently in the live vehicle population, it's not possible for us to determine whether they are legal or illegal without doing a physical inspection of the vehicle or doing those tests or subjecting it to the same process as it come out of the Public Protector Report. And of course, it's the competency of the NRCS to do that issuing of the model numbers. Now, I'm going to deal with some of the questions in tandem. The issue that was raised by Honorable Hansinger regarding the is it possible to determine from the slide what happened to these panel vans? I think that is the issue. I was saying from the system we cannot determine whether it's illegal or legally converted. It needs a physical inspection, but we can identify them, because when the vehicle is introduced by the MIB, we record the description of the vehicle at importing, manufacturing, or when it is completed as a built vehicle or semi-built vehicle, we record that description. So whenever there's a modification made to the description, that change is recorded. Now, following the initial investigation and when the issue was highlighted, and it was around about 2009, I think, the first time when the matter was raised in 2009, various changes were implemented on the NATIS to be able to control this issue. First of all, no registering authority cashier was then allowed to make any changes to the description of the vehicle if the description is a panel van. There needs to be a higher level of authority, and that was centralized at what is called the provincial help desk. So only provincial help desk users are able to modify the description from a panel van to another vehicle. But before they do that, they must also indicate what is the model number for the converted vehicle. So they cannot just also change the panel van description to another description, let's say ambulance or combi or bus. They have to indicate the model number as issued by the NRCS for the converted vehicle. Then only the system will allow them to change the description and the seating capacity. So there are restrictions in terms of the seating capacity. For a panel van, it is actually set at 6, not 3, because there are some panel vans that are particularly being used, for example, by the South African Post Office when they go and drop off the mailman to distribute the mail. Their vehicles, their panel vans have got a second row of seats before you get to the goods compartment at the back of the vehicle. So the maximum number of seats in a panel van is 6. So if you want to change that to anything else, the system will block you and you are not able to do that at the lower level. It can only happen at a provincial level. And then as I mentioned, so there are those other controls. Now, when it gets to a provincial level, even in there, we've got segregation of duties at the provincial level. Not a single user can make the change. It has to go through a minimum of 3 steps. There is a verification step where a verifier checks the documentation. There is then the approver, who is a second person, and the system controls that it's not the same person who is doing that. And then there's the final part, which is the capturer. So even the person who applies the change on the system has to be a different person from both the verifier and the approver. So within the provincial help desk as well, there is segregation of duties when dealing with what we call sensitive transactions, and the changing of a description from panel van to anything else is considered a sensitive transaction. There is a system that we use for that. It's built in latest. It's called the task management system, and that gives us all the audit reports and everything that we require, including the attachments that were submitted. They scan it in and they attach it onto the request for this conversion, and that's accessible to any auditors that have to check that information or investigators that have to check the information. With regard to the issue about how access is controlled, yes, there is a user number and password for every single user. It's linked to a specific person. The password expires every 30 days. It must be changed every 30 days. And if there's inactivity for more than 90 days, that account is locked and you must request a reset from the provincial help desk. We are moving into the next phase where we will be integrating with Department of Home Affairs and implementing the biometric identification of the users, where we will be able to verify their fingerprints from the Home Affairs database, so we can categorically identify that this person has not shared his password with anybody else. The issue about ambulances is that as far as we have been informed, both by Toyota as well as Mr. De Beer, who was quite widely named in the portfolio committee report. Toyota specifically have got a chassis number range that they have identified that can be used for the conversion of the panel vans to ambulances. So there's a specific type of van or chassis that they build which can be converted for ambulances. It's reinforced to be used as an ambulance. That's why we've got such a high number of ambulance conversions from panel vans. And again, there, it's not possible for us to determine whether the actual conversion that's been applied has been the legal one, a legal one or illegal one. It's only by involving the NRCS and determining that they have inspected that vehicle correctly that we can determine whether it's an illegal or illegal vehicle. In terms of the 2017 state of the system, in 2017 when we took over, we discovered that over the years, Tasima did not invest in the core infrastructure of the NATIS. So the infrastructure, the last infrastructure upgrade was in 2009. So the core servers and all of that equipment has now reached what we call end of life. It is still supported by the manufacturer, but they no longer manufacturing that specific model. We are in the process of doing what's called an infrastructure refresh. So the procurement processes have commenced. They're currently underway. I think by the quarter four of this financial year, we should have completed the procurement processes, and then there will be a process of obviously installing that equipment and commissioning it so that we have got the latest available hardware in our data center, disaster recovery center. Although the equipment is end of life, we do have redundancy both in the data center and the disaster recovery center. We can operate on a single component. It can handle the load. It has been spec to do that. So there is redundancy both in the data center and the disaster recovery center. And we do have a full team that monitors that and looks after the performance of the system. Honorable McDonald asked the question about the MIBs. remember, yes, it is possible for a manufacturer to also have the role of being a bodybuilder, although it is very rare. Normally, those are done by other entities, but it is possible that they can introduce a vehicle as a panel van, and then later on, they can update that record before it is registered for the first time. They can update that record in to record what is the final description of that vehicle. But again, similar to the other controls that, that are in place, we do have tracking of that, that specific data. So it's not possible for them to do it without us picking it up. And that's why in this data, there could be some of those examples that are there. And that actually links into the next question where you asked about the single deck bus. Remember, these are the vehicles which are normally described as midi buses. So your passenger vehicles between 16 and 23 seats. It's a the description in the regulation is that it's a bus with the capacity up to 23 seats. Examples of those would be the Mercedes-Benz Sprinter, your VW Crafters, their vehicles, and so on. All of those vehicles come into the country as an imported panel van. They do not bring any passenger vehicles of that kind into the country. It is then converted by bodybuilders across the country into passenger vehicles. So that's why you've got such a high number of them. When they land in South Africa, they are introduced as panel vans, and then the bodybuilders who then do the conversions. You also asked a question about the database of converted vehicles. What we had given you was the 44,000 vehicles out of our live vehicle population of 13 million. That is the number of vehicles that are currently what's in our live vehicle population. That started its life somewhere as a panel van and is now another description. So that number is the actual database of vehicles that were at some point introduced to the system as a panel van, and now they've got a different vehicle description. Of course, we've left out the vehicles that are still panel vans that are being used for whatever purpose it is, because those are also valid descriptions. Member Nolushungu asked the question about how these vehicles were registered. While the vehicles only certified to carry three seats, yes, at the time when this was done before 2009, there were no controls on the system to prevent that. It could have been done at a vehicle testing station or at the licensing office. And some of them were done at provincial offices, but the controls on the system were not very good. When this problem was highlighted, changes were immediately requested and it went through the process. And the controls that I referred to earlier, those controls were implemented in 2009 already to prevent some of these things from happening. But what did not happen, member, was the 2,353 vehicles that were investigated by the public protector. They were never marked on the system after that report came out. They were left, and those vehicles were operated. The original owners of those vehicles ended up selling them when they knew there were issues to unsuspecting buyers. And it was only in 2017 when the RTMC took over, the DOT requested us to put an administration marker to flag those vehicles as illegal conversions, that we started to prevent them from being licensed, from obtaining a license disc and being operated on a public road. It just reminds me about an earlier question that Member Winsinger had about the number. Yes, the public protector report refers to 2,353 vehicles. We received a list of VIN numbers from the team at public transport, out of the VIN numbers that we had received, we could only locate 2,168 vehicles on the system that had not been converted. So the other 100 and odd vehicles, they were already recorded with a new model number that was issued for the what was called the retrofit program, where they issued four model numbers, which aim to regularize these illegal conversions. I think it does refer to the retrofit program. So the other vehicles were part of the retrofit program. That's why we did not put an administration mark on them. We were only requested to mark the vehicles that did not go through the retrofit program. That's why we only marked 2,168 VIN numbers. Then member Nongchungo also asked, were people arrested in 2009? Remember, I don't have the exact information of whether they were arrested, but I am aware that the SIU did prepare a report on the matter. I don't know from the time when I was working for Tasima back then, that the SIU did prepare a report into the matter. I'm not sure where that report ended up, but I'm sure we can follow up after the meeting and provide feedback on that issue. The question was asked, when did, from Member Sutole, when did RTMC identify that illegal penalty events existed? Of course, the issue started way back in 2009. That was the first time when we became aware of the practice of converting the panel vans to passenger vehicles. And unfortunately, during that time, RTMC was not involved in the process. It was Department of Transport and the contractor Tasima. So in 2009 was the first time that we became aware of that. The issue about the 66 officials that have to be arrested, the time frame, I think the CEO will deal with that. I'm just going to deal with the last part of the issue about the proper, whether there's audit functionality on the system. There is extensive audit information on changes to person records, vehicle records, driving licenses, as well as financial records. We have a audit functionality where we've got over 9 billion records, audit history records that we track. And that was just building up from when the system went live in 2007. So we've got extensive audit records of changes. And as we develop new functionality, we are continuously adding better checks, or as new reports come out and they identify gaps, we do look at that. So there is extensive auditing of the transactions on the system. And with regard to the loss of information, we do have a governance charter that we follow. And yes, we can never be sure that we haven't lost any information, but that's why we do information system audits, and we do our data sanity checks and our disaster recovery checks. And through that process, which is also externally audited by the Auditor General, and from time to time we also get external assessments done by, you know, the Big Five audit firms or other audit firms other than the Big Five. Those are assurance exercises that we undertake to ensure that our business continuity is in place, and you know, touch wood, we still think that we are 100% in order in terms of all the information that we haven't lost any since the presentation. There was a question about imported vehicles. How are they registered? Oh, the 510 imported vehicles. Yes. So how that happens, member, is that normally you have to get four documents that has to accompany the registration of an imported vehicle. It's a letter of authority from the National Regulator for Compulsory Standards, NRCS, that indicates that the vehicle does comply with our standards. You need to get your customs document, your bill of entry. And then the third one is a ITEC certificate or a letter of import. So ITEC would give you a certificate if the vehicle was manufactured outside of SADC. If it is manufactured inside SADC area, they will just give you a letter to say, yes, the vehicle isn't from the SADC area. And then the fourth document you need is a police clearance for that vehicle. Now, what happened in this case is these vehicles were introduced to the system not as imported vehicles. They were introduced as another kind of vehicle that was never on the system, which is normally a vehicle that's built up from parts or a vehicle that they indicate was previously registered, but then it was default deregistered where it goes into the archive. So what they've done is they then circumvent this check where we have the LOAs, the customs documentation that has to accompany these vehicles. Now, how we picked it up is that, of course, there's a process that's called VIN pattern matching, where you can check that the VIN numbers were from a specific time and the serial numbers are within the range that the manufacturer has provided for that. So normally you catch them out with that, where the year of manufacture is incorrect and the range of the VIN number is outside the range that the manufactured in that specific year. And that's how we identified that these vehicles could not have been legally manufactured. They had to be imported because they were destined for another country. So once they were then registered, we were then able to do that analysis and with the investigation, the physical investigation, and the roadblocks that were conducted with these vehicles were identified. We were able to physically inspect the VINs and make sure, and that's how the vehicles were identified as what they call gray imports into the country. And there was a question about which areas of the system is editable. Remember, this is a very broad question, but with regard to the panel vents, I think I did touch on it. If it is a panel vent, you cannot change the description, the seating capacity, unless you first go and change the model number. And the function to change the model number is at a provincial level. So you must first change the model number to the new model number that was issued by the NRCS for the conversion, and then you are able to change the description to a minibus or a midibus or whatever, and then you are able to then change the seating capacity. So the control is that as a panel van, you can't edit those fields. You can only edit it after you've entered in a new model number for the vehicle, which is issued by the NRCS for that specific vehicle. Thank you, Chair. I'm going to hand over to the CEO.
Chairperson,
you can wrap up those round of questions.
Let me then round up on the number of questions that have been asked. The clear issue that comes across is the fact that for something illegal to happen, you need to have collusion amongst a number of units. Like the 510, we had collusion from Home Affairs, you had collusion from the accreditor, you had collusion from the South African police, you had collusion from the province. That's one issue. And what also must come very clear is that the powers to register, it's with the province. All what we're doing as the RTMC, we now run the checks. That's how we pick these cars up, because we are constantly running the checks as to whether the provinces and the municipalities, when they register, they are doing the right thing. That's when we picked it up. And in this instance, we had to send our own national traffic police to go and do the roadblocks and identify those areas, and collaborated with the Hawks to arrest them. In this instance, there was nobody from the province. Hence, we dealt with these matters. The issue of the officers to be arrested, yes, they are still in the employ. We're still keeping them under surveillance. But what takes longer is that the RTMC does not have the arresting powers. We collaborate with the Hawks, DPCI. What they will then do, they'll introduce a project. And that project will take plus or minus minimum 6 months and maximum 2 years, because they too have also to satisfy themselves that the issue that we have given to them, it's proper, and also do a proper assessment at some stage, include the public protectors and public prosecutors to ensure that the case is it's going to be successfully prosecuted. So those employees were keeping them under watch. They're still in the employ. Those that have also resigned after we have arrested them,
The matters are still in court, but what was not done was the issue of completing the disciplinary areas. We believe they have been advised to take, to resign and take their money, because we advise the provinces that once we arrest somebody, we wish you to follow a disciplinary hearing, but put a hold on the pension fund so that we must then begin to recover whatever the money, the little that we can. For instance, in Mpumalanga, the entire scope of the investigation, it's 1.1 billion. We know we are not going to recover that 1.1 billion, but we will require, we can recover part of the amount. And then the last one was the, we've dealt with those that we resigned. I think I've just summed the issues that relates to, but we need to amplify the issue of the conversions. That ambulances by their nature are converted, but whether it's illegal or legal, that's the issue that we must distinguish from the areas, because they are made from the chassis of a Quantum or of a Iveco. Then it needed to be converted into an ambulance. That's all that I wanted to cover on these issues.
So. Thank you very much, CEO and your team there. Colleagues, there are the responses. Although you don't buy me any coffee or anything, I'm always generous to give you follow-up questions. So colleagues, this is your opportunity for follow-up questions. I will then introduce my issues after your follow-up questions on your first round. Can I see indication? I'm assuming that these hands are fresh hands. If I'm correct, it's Honorable Hunsinger. Okay, this time let's start it the other way around. Let's start with Honorable McDonald, will followed by Honorable Hunsinger. Honorable Nolchungu, you don't have a follow-up. Honorable Sithole, should I close you out of this round? Going, gone. Honorable McDonald, followed by Honorable Hunsinger, then I will come in.
Thank you, Chair. I welcome the responses from the RTMC. It was well-prepared responses. Chair, one of the follow-up questions that I would like to have clarity on is, as stated by the RTMC in their responses now, that there seems to be a difference between the ambulance Quantum and the Quantum that were illegally converted. Chair, I'm a little bit concerned. We are facing a serious challenge that should people 5 years from now die or couple of you in these ambulances and it is later found that these ambulances were the same Quantums but were just misrepresented by Toyota, for an example. Can we not flag all these vehicles and have them inspected on their next renewal of licenses to assist us as a department and as South Africans to root out these illegal conversions of all these commercial vehicles that have been converted, including the trucks, the panel vans, all of them, the station wagons, and then we can assert ourselves and make sure that these vehicles are actually converted legally and thus are legitimately on the roads of South Africa. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Hunsinger.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you especially for your generosity in allowing this next round. It is rather important. Thank you for the submissions by Advocate Ms. Sibi and also Mr. Karavala. Follow-up question on the eNATIS system, but in particular, the auditing of changes, where you said that there are three steps involved in the help desk from the provincial traffic departments. In that a stage of verification, a stage of approval, and a stage of capturing, if I recall it correctly. My question is, since when is this the case? Was it a part of an improvement of the eNATA system, which then might have been that there was a window period where these sort of three levels was not in place? So since when is this three-step firewalling, if you like, in place? Second question is, I still need to fully understand your slide 26, where you've got the whole population of vehicles, and I need to understand the status of that. Those 4,000 about in number, which is mentioned there in total, are those 4,000 vehicles to be understood as the population of possibly illegally converted panel vans, definitely illegally converted panel vans, or how should I understand it? The whole question of retrofitment, which you specified and clarified that the test of the SABS at the stage which was sort of done under this retrofitment process, that it was a static test. Have you been instructed by the Department of Transport to then green flag those vehicles? In other words, that they are cleared of being illegal anymore. So in other words, did the department instruct you or gave you an assurance or a letter of some kind that the retrofitted vehicles should not be flagged as illegal? Then just also provide me with some insight, having the privilege of Mr. Caravalla, to just explain to us the whole thing about the VIN number. Can the VIN number be changed? Because as I understand it, the VIN number is part of a world manufacturer's index, so that it cannot be changed. So given the fact that it cannot be changed, and please state whether there was a stage where it might have been changed in the period before 2017, for instance, after you got the judgment to then take full control of the eNATA system. You know, for instance, the JTFH numbers could have been changed to JTFH, for instance. And could you explain those JTFH, JTFP numbers to my colleagues in the committee so that we get the privilege of your knowledge on that, please? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Nsinga. Honorable Noluchungu.
Thank you, Chair. I'm covered.
Thank you so much. I didn't leave anybody outside. All right. Let me also add my voice to what the colleagues have said, where I think maybe I've not been covered. I think what I would like you, from you, CEO and the team, to maybe talk to us from your heart. It appears to me, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that your interest in the alleged or not alleged illegal conversions is a response only to what the public protector had been investigating. It doesn't appear to me that after that trigger was let off, there were red flags at the RTMC to say, oopsie, although the public protector was limited, it seems like there is a bigger problem. Therefore, we need to do something about it. I don't get that sense. that you thought that maybe you could take this as a project so that ultimately your main purpose is to keep the roads safe. Therefore, if these vehicles are left out there, we will continue to have roads that are not safe. Hence, I say this one is something that has to be spoken to from your heart. Listening to the colleagues asking the questions and the follow-ups, it is clear that the numbers don't seem to match up in terms of what is on your system and what is not on your system. I want you to understand that our intention and our asking the questions is not to try and say NATIS is not doing its function or not, but is to get to the bottom of this and say, is it possible that this NATIS could have been, amongst others, a big entry to these vehicles that have come in there? Maybe I should have said this at the beginning, but I needed to give you the benefit of the doubt with the team that this is not an investigation where somebody will be recommended to be charged. No, we want to get what is the root cause of what we have on our roads and how best can we recommend to the department or the public protector or whoever on how to assist you. Because if we get rid of these vehicles on the road, we are assisting you as the RTMC to keep our roads very safe. Again, one of the things I'm saying is that if we listen to what Kevin said around the static tests, obviously to me, it would appear that that was a big anomaly, that those static tests were not done in the right way. And I would be interested to say, then what actions are you taking? That maybe could be linked to what Honorable Hun Singha said about, was there a specific instruction given to you? One of the things that was raised in the first round by Honorable McDonald was the issue of a possible VET bypassing, for lack of a better word. I know this is not SARS or whatever, but have you had any sharing of information with SARS to say maybe there is something here, SARS, you could look into and see if there is any money that is owed to the state? Now, if you look at your many users of the NATIS at province and all the three levels that has been explained, which I appreciate, my direct question is there a process to have a security clearance or checking of criminal record of anybody who is given access to the system, as it were? Now, your investigation details account, which we appreciate, I think with the exception of Eastern Cape and, Eastern Cape I could pick up, I'm not sure. It is very clear that these were sort of things that were linked to NATIS and our subject matter of interest. In Mpumalanga, for instance, you just say 60 million over 6 months and you mention figures. It is not clear whether these were linked to what we are interested in, or was it in the broader scheme of things, maybe a roadworthy certificate on a genuinely converted vehicle or a genuine vehicle. So it's not very clear on the other provinces where these arrests linked to what the subject matter of the subcommittee is. Even the vehicles that were being discontinued, or in your presentation, you say towed. While we appreciate all the categories of vehicles that the legislation empowers you to tow or to impound, again, it went too broad than where we were. It is good information, but I would have loved to know exactly, as it relates to our subject matter, how many vehicles were impounded or removed or whatever the case may be. So I know my response or my questions are very broad, but I would like you, CEO and the team, if you could give us some assistance in that round of questions, and we will try and map a way forward going here. I will need to pick the thoughts of my colleagues of what I have in mind. So CEO, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. And I will endeavor to execute the directive accordingly. Chair, you are saying from the heart, and I took it from the fact that we missed Easter, where we could have had a heart-to-heart talk with the Creator. Maybe this is an opportunity that I must do so. Chair, let's then get to the issues. The 42,966 figure, it's a figure that in the system we have of converted vehicles. Now we need to dissect the number. Go back to say, what are the illegal conversions? What is it that is gonna need? It will therefore mean, which is possible, and that question was asked by the Honorable Ms. McDonald, we can flag all the vehicles in our system and force them to be re-examined in the sense that they must be submitted for roadworthy. In that process, we can deal with those issues. But we must be very mindful of the fact that the statement that I made, that there is a collusion amongst three legs of state. We need to be very clear that the department should then give us the mandate and say, RTMC, playing in oversight, because we must look at the legislation. The legislation, there's a concurrent function with both the province and the national, which is the department and the municipality. Perhaps to address the issue which was raised by the public protector is to flag the 42,000 and put a period that we are going to re-examine all those and see whether they qualify in terms of the criteria that we'll have put in relation to the validation of those vehicles. Correctly, sir, Chair, for the subcommittee, we have not got to the entire issues because the presentation that we are given, it's the entire value chain of the fraud and corruption. Let me then deal with the matters. If you look at the Mpumalanga, it's not a matter of the conversion. It's a matter where you find a motor dealer. It's supposed to register mainly trucks. A vehicle is supposed to be paid, for argument's sake, for licensing 80,000. There are 20 of those. He colludes with the officers in the DNTC to then make it a no-fee registration. So as government, you are losing the 800,000, the officer has made it a no-fee licensing. And he then takes his card from the law and from the dealer. It's not talking to the illegal conversion, it's the entire value chain of the motor dealers, the RANA and the DLTC. So the question is the innatist part of that process? Yes, because the person who's operating the innatist has access legally so. He has the infrastructure number because that's how we identify our users. He has the infrastructure number. They then collude. He'll collude with the supervisor because, and the help desk, because for a no-fee transaction, three other categories in terms of the segregation have to accede to that process. So if the three collude, that system is then be subverted. Two, the issue of the conversions can be easily dissected and excluded because we know the ambulances, but what we cannot give assurance, it's what it said, if Toyota is misrepresenting or committing fraud on its side, how do we validate? Then that will then mean that prior to a vehicle being introduced on the system, we must go and see in the factory floor that this is the chassis number, this is the engine number. So at the introduction, we might then prove this issue because it's only a human element that needs to deal with that process. And there was, did the department give us directives only to flag those that were retrofitted? Yes, they did give us that directive, which was limited, informed by the fact that the power and the authority is with the department, so we had to execute that. But we are then saying, if the committee can broaden that and be executed, we do believe that it's doable. We have the capacity. Yes, it's gonna do take us some time, but it's doable. Chair, allow me not to be a miser. Mr. Hansinger so loved the voice of Mr. Kevin Caravalla. I can't deny him that opportunity. I will give Mr. Caravalla to deal with the other issues.
That sounded like you were usurping my powers as CEO, but we can deal with that offsite.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, with regard to the VIN numbers, the VIN number cannot be changed once it is introduced on the system unless it is done by the South African Police Service. They're the only entity that can change the VIN number. However, there are rules that are in place, as Mr. Hunsinger had identified, the World Manufacturer Index. Identifier. We do record that on the system. So the first three characters of the VIN number is the World Manufacturer Identifier, and that has to be matching with the make of the vehicle. So a VIN number that starts with AHT, for example, is a Toyota that was manufactured in Africa. How we know that, in South Africa specifically, is that all VIN numbers starting with AA up until AH is reserved for South Africa. So you'll find VW has AA5, for example. Toyota's got AHT. However, a Toyota that's manufactured in Japan would start with JT. So J being for Japan and T being specifically for Toyota. Honda, for example, has got JH. So we are able to determine where a vehicle has been manufactured based on the VIN number. Now, I mentioned the issue of pattern matching. So we have established, and this we get on a periodic basis from the manufacturers, what is the serial numbers, the maximum serial numbers that they have issued for a specific range of VIN. So a VIN number is made up of 17 digits, and the last five or six digits on that is what they call the serial number, which is actually the specific unit number of the vehicle type that they have manufactured. So they do provide us with that range so that when we do have a situation where vehicles have to be inspected or audited, we are able to determine whether the VIN number is out of range or within range of that specific model that they had manufactured when it was manufactured. Now, what we do find though is sometimes there are gaps in those model series because they would have manufactured maybe a left-hand drive version of the vehicle in South Africa, and they would have exported it without it having to be introduced in the system because it's left-hand drive. It can never be registered in South Africa. It's meant for the export market. And the syndicates would be going through those and identifying those gaps in those ranges. And then they exploit that by when a vehicle is cloned, they would use that VIN number, knowing that number 10 in the range hasn't been used, and they would register a vehicle using number 10. And that's where the collusion, as the CEO had said, comes in, where in order to do that, they will need assistance from the police to be able, who is supposed to check the vehicle and issue what's called an RPI, the request for police identification, where they then say, this is the VIN number that I've seen on the vehicle. So there's collusion then with the police in terms of completing that part of the process. So that's how they do sometimes get through the cracks on the issue of the range of the VIN numbers. And but then we normally pick that up with the audits that we do when we get the data from NAMSA. The question with regard to sharing of information with SARS, we do in fact share a lot of information with SARS, but we have not on specifically on this issue of the panel van conversions. We are in fact meeting, our next meeting as a task team together with other agencies is on the 8th of December. I will definitely be adding this item to the agenda where we can explore the issue of identifying whether there's any other processes that we can follow perhaps to recover some of the tax and the VAT that has been lost to the economy. So I will definitely put it on the agenda for the, I think our next meeting is on the 8th of December. Yes. And then in terms of the impoundments, we've got 66 vehicles that we have identified in the 2018 Eastern Cape project, where that is specifically related to this matter. But we will be coming back, I think we can come back to the committee with further details. Also note that we do have the provincial traffic authorities with impoundment facilities that might have also impounded these vehicles. But there's also, you will see that there's a number of vehicles in that list on slide 25 that have been deregistered by request. And those are the vehicles which are now going through the taxi scrapping process, where the taxi scrapping agency is actually demolishing some of those vehicles. So a number of them are going through that process as well. I think that covers the questions, Chair. Oh, yes, sir. So on the static test, sorry, Chair, I missed the one on the static test. Yes, Chair, and I think in the same vein as the CEO said, speaking from the heart, that is an issue. And yes, the NATO's contributed, and the lack of controls at the time contributed to this problem. It was very easy for the dealerships together with the users to be able to do this. Although there was guidelines in terms of how you convert a vehicle, how you record the conversion of a vehicle in the system, the controls weren't on the system back then. So it definitely did contribute to make it easy for the users to be able to do that. So definitely it was an entry point for these conversions to be done. And it is correct that the identification of the vehicles in 2009, the 2,500 that were initially identified as illegal conversions, did trigger this issue. And as the CEO had said, now we will then be going back and looking at this and highlighting the big issue and focusing our programs on this to deal with these illegal conversions. Sorry.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much, CEO and colleagues there. I see you've got a very capable assistant there who's taking notes and reminding you of questions. We also commend her, although we had not seen her. But colleagues, I want to invite you now to comment on the thought that I'm throwing into your heads now, without preparing you fully, that in my view, it is very clear that yes, we've got somewhere with this presentation, but I think there are a couple of unanswered questions. I don't know what is your feeling, colleagues. I want us to discuss this in the presence of the RTMC because if we want to request them to come back maybe for a shorter period, much more focus on areas that we might feel are a bit lacking, I want us to talk to that now. Colleagues, I want to invite hands at this moment. I see Honorable McDonald's hand is up. Anybody else? Anyway, if you don't raise your hand, I'm going to force you to talk. So those are powers you gave me when you said I must be chairperson. So we'll ask Honorable, we'll start with Honorable McDonald, followed by Honorable Hunsinger. I want us just to zoom ourselves into, you've received information, you have some questions. Are you satisfied? What is the view so that we can map a way forward, please? Honorable McDonald, followed by Honorable Hunsinger.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you to the RTMC for the presentation again and the subsequent follow-up question answers. Chair, I would plead through you, Chair, that we might have a second meeting with them so we can tie up some of these burning issues on the actual amount of vehicles that have been illegally converted. Not 100% sure how I must phrase this technology, but the terminology, but something like that, Chair. And then, so that, and I would also say that if possible, that we meet with the public protector to also get her insights on how she got there from the whistleblower and from the whole thing, so that when we compile our final report, we have a very clear picture of where we are going with this, Chair. Because I can see that there is, in not so many words, but there is a possibility that some sectors have abused the system of the RTMC to that vehicles have actually been illegally registered on the system, and that means that there's some vehicles that are running around under different VIN numbers that are actually of the original illegal conversions, Chair. So that's my submission, Chair. I mean, if I don't, I'm not phrasing this correctly, I apologies, but this is where I'm leading to, Chair.
All right, thank you very much. In inviting Honorable Hunsinger, I would like, if you don't mind, that if you have any other thought, Honorable Hunsinger, regarding any other stakeholder, we will talk about that. But I want us to confine ourselves to what we have just received now, RTMC, and the gaps that we still want to close. Honorable Hunsinger.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks again for answers in the second round. Chairperson, I might have missed the answer on the three levels since when that process was in place. So I might have missed that answer, but it would really be greatly appreciated if I could just get verification on that. Since when? Those three level or those three steps firewalling was in place from the provincial help desk specifically. Chairperson, in response to your request on reflecting in this session, most certainly with each and every session, new questions develop, new uncertainties develop, and to be blunt, I'm disappointed that road safety wasn't the first priority, given the large number of known vehicles on our roads that have been converted. I do appreciate, you know, the intention to clamp down on the whole, if we could call it, a value chain of colluders. And that is the difficult thing, to find the balance between that. When to prioritize which of the two? Should one blindly just clamp down on all illegal vehicles and not address the system of collusion? Or should you allow unsafe vehicles to stay on the road while investigations carry on, and at the end you close down the whole thing, or hope to close down the whole thing? So I do appreciate the balance in that thought, and that people might think about this differently. And in that regard, I'm disappointed, because road safety to me, you know, would have been the most important thing. Chairperson, there are more questions, and as we carry on in interviewing more people and more entities and more stakeholders, because it's not just a public sector matter. This is also a private sector matter. So currently we're engaging within the public sector domain, and I'm sure that, you know, there would be reason for RTMC to engage with us again, since we built understanding, and a balance is always important, because there are also always more sides to any condition or scenario or perception. So Chairperson, definitely, to me it was, I've gained knowledge through the answers, and also bigger understanding, but definitely reason for extended concern and other entities and stakeholders. And I would want to engage with you as chairperson of the subcommittee in this regard. Thank you, chairperson.
Right. All right. Thank you. If I'm hearing you well, you are saying yes, but not in the too immediate future now. Let's gather information and we might go back. All right. Super. Honorable Noel Chungu, any comments?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, a new stakeholder has been mentioned here that I never thought of, the province. All along, I've been thinking that it is RTMC, but now province was in charge before this thing came about. And then innate's number is allocated after homologation. That allows the manufacturer to offer the vehicle for sale. Obviously, there will be stats of all those vehicles that went for homologation during that period. Maybe RTMC can go and get those stats. It will make their lives easier, because they can retrieve that information. And then the possibility of engaging Toyota and other stakeholders. I think this is something that we had identified right from the beginning, that there was a collusion. There is no way that there was only one party in this thing. So I support the issue of engaging more stakeholders and then call them at the later stage. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable C. Tole, any comment?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I think Honorable Chairperson, first of all, we have to engage further with the RTMC, because there's a lot of things that we need to get from them. And another thing, Chairperson, I will ask even themselves that they must go deeper on this issue of panel vent, because it seems that there's a lot of things that they have even themselves to understand it, so that we must have the fully research information about this panel event. And the other chairperson, I think another stakeholder that has been left outside is the municipalities, because some things are being happened in our municipalities, if we can actually include them in our stakeholder engagement. And the last one, Chairperson, is that one of the questions that we have asked, if they can actually write them to us, so that they respond them on writing, so that we must actually have the full information. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, colleagues. I hope you are not wearing a Kaiser Chiefs t-shirt there, because we don't want to visit you in hospital because your blood pressure has gone up too much. Colleagues, I think consensus is that, one, we are still satisfied so far with what we have received from the RTMC. There are more questions which we will be able to even frame more when we get other stakeholders. And the reason I was pushing you to that corner, colleagues, was I wanted us to discuss the next week's stakeholders, but I've got a good sense that, yes, the RTMC is critical, but for now, we are grateful to what you have given us. If I may answer two things that colleagues have raised, the municipalities and province. I think the RTMC is a representative as it relates to these matters of both province and the municipalities. That is why it's called a corporation, not an agency, because they represent, or they should have, I don't know if the shareholders committee does meet or not, of MECs plus SALGA. So all of them, when we speak to the CEO of RTMC, we have spoken to everybody there. Although I had the CEO also trying to mention that it's a concurrent function. No, CEO, on this matter, you are the RTMC, and we expect you to pull all those people together so that we have one source of information. Because if we are to meet provinces or municipalities, which one do we exclude and so forth? So we are entirely reliant on you. So I want to thank you very much, you and your team, for all the information that has been shared. And I'm sure that even the others, like Ndade Sydney there, who we only had when he was greeting us, and the spokesperson, they've had the questions, and they will also be assisting the team in preparation. We will certainly request some another interaction, but not in the immediate future. There are a couple of areas that, as you heard the honorable members raising questions, we are very interested in. So for now, I want us to leave it at that. And thank you very much, CEO, once more, for always being available. Every time we want the RTMC, you as the head of that organization, always make yourself available. And I think we do not take it for granted. We need to appreciate that. You could have easily said, no, this is a technical matter, I'll give it to the technical guys. But you took time to see the subcommittee. We truly appreciate it. And before we wrap up other things of the subcommittee, we are more than willing to take your last comment and release you so that we can then finish our other matters in the committee, which you don't really have to be part of.
Chairperson, thanks so much, as well as to the members of the portfolio committee. It is quite a privilege and honor for us when we are summoned to appear before you, because every engagement broadens our horizon and the thinking. And it is on those bases that we forever are willing to learn from the best. And we wish to thank you, Chairperson. As I close, Chairperson, there's a new phenomenon that has come. And I heard the Chairperson talking about the Kaiser Chiefs. All Kaiser Chiefs fans have undergone a heart surgery. They no longer feel the pain. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you very much, CEO. Yeah. You are released to attend to other matters. Thank you so much once more, and your team. Colleagues, let's get back, and the House sitting is at 3 p.m., so we need to wrap up the meeting. So we have got 2 days, colleagues, next week that is the first and the second. If you look at the draft program that was submitted to us, and thank you very much for your comments on the chat box there, just that you are not making my life easy because you have made them so broad, but I trust you that you will assist me. We have Wednesday the 25th, and that is next week now, not Wednesday the 25th. It is the first. Where am I? We had thought that maybe we might need a follow-up with the RTMC, but it has been clear that for now we are fine. We will call them at another stage. Our time there is 12:45 till 1:50. And on Wednesday, it is 12:45 till 2:50. There is a longer time on Wednesday. You have given me many suggestions. The RTMC next week is certainly gone. Honorable McDonald had suggested we see the public protector. He has been kind enough to check with her office, and it appears that she can see us next week if we so agree. Toyota is coming out also, and there is the NRCS, which has been mentioned a lot here, and the taxi associations. We only got 2 days till the end of this year, and we need to agree on which of these stakeholders you have identified would you prefer we try and get hold of. It will also depend, I'm sure, on their availability, and we can see how we can juggle around. Talk to me, colleagues. It's the public protector, it's Toyota, it's NRCS, and the taxi associations.
Chairperson.
Yes, Honorable Stolle.
My suggestion is that we must start with the taxi, with the Toyota, because it's the Toyota are the manufacturer of this panel van.
Toyota has got three nominations, although Honorable Zwunsing, yeah, I said later, but I don't think he's violently opposed if we see them early enough. Can I hear other colleagues' comments?
Honorable Chair?
Yes, go ahead, Honorable. Yes.
I would submit that that we see the PP win next year then, that we then endeavor to see the NCRS and Toyota, maybe Toyota first and then NCRS, because it's the, we need to get them, it's the egg before the egg and chicken situation, yeah? And I think that we can, because some things that were raised in the RTMC now regarding that some of the panel vans that were converted to ambulances were panel vans, but those were different type of panel vans according to Toyota that were registered as ambulances. So can we maybe then pursue Toyota first and then the NCRS, and then next year as soon as possible the PP? But that's my submission, Chair, but we can also see the PP, it doesn't matter. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Honorable Hunsinger.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, all of the entities and all of the stakeholders are important, and definitely we need to see all of them. But I think there is a benefit to the working of the committee in staging each of those very important stakeholders in a particular priority, because it would add to the build-up of the inquiry and the questioning. Therefore, I submit, Chairperson, that the next that we should see is either the public protector and the NRCS To me, both of those two components will add to knowledge and understanding before we see any of the manufacturers, because it's not just Toyota. In this case, Toyota is of high priority, even so. So I would suggest that we, if the public protector is available for next week, that would be great. And that we then alternatively look at NRCS. After that, not just the taxi associations, but also SA Taxi Finance, because the financiers have approved the panel van conversions, and in some cases even have been involved. But we need someone to tell us that they've been involved. So we're building a case here. And therefore, Toyota to me is a very important, the most important, but not in terms of building our knowledge and understanding, the next important. So Chairperson, Public Protector, NRCS, Taxi Associations, SA Taxi Finance, and then ultimately the manufacturers, Toyota being the next one. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, colleagues. I think I'm picking up, and this is my summary, that we conclude with those that are not, shall I say, directly affected. Those who are more on the regulatory policy legal side, like we saw the department, RTMC, the public protector, and the NRCS would fall in that category of those who are more on the regulatory side to broaden the framework. So it would appear to me that that's consensus, that we try and pursue these two on both the 1st and the 2nd of December. A lot of groundwork has been done already by Honorable McDonald, which we appreciate. I will pass the message to the secretary. She will hear this so that we can make sure we get them. And then I would propose also that on our last day, which will be the 2nd next week, if colleagues could be prepared that as we wrap up the meeting, we reflect on what we have achieved so far. Are we in the right direction or not? Very briefly, and we can begin to sort of start setting up our priorities for the new year. So that as we leave, we can say, we set ourselves terms of reference. Are we on course? Have we achieved much? And how do we then pursue the next year? So that we can leave it at a point where we know where we have left it. That is where I would like to sum it up, colleagues. And I'm sure we are all together. Last but not least, colleagues, we have minutes of our subcommittee, which was on the 18th of November, where we met the Department of Transport, and the minutes were circulated to us. They are very brief. I think they are more elaborate than, yes, yeah, they are. They are quite elaborate. I don't know if there are any comments on the minutes. Can I have somebody to move for adoption, colleagues, please?
Chairperson, I would move for adoption, Chris Hunsinger.
Thank you very much. Any second?
Seconded by McDonald.
Thank you very much, Honorable McDee. Yes. Colleagues, thank you very much. As recommended, I think if we can, NRCS, we must try and push to the 2nd and push the public protector to the 1st, if we agree, because the public protector one, I think it's straightforward. She wrote the report, she's bringing us up to speed. NRCS, we need more information from them, but we'll see how they are available to us, and then we'll take it from there. On that note, colleagues, I want to adjourn the meeting, but I want to check if there's anything I might have missed that is very important. Nothing. Thank you very much.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Apologies. Yeah. Jay.
No problem.
I also, in light of my recent investigation regarding the SARS issue on these vehicles, Jay, I would like maybe to ask if the secretary can also just maybe ask the researchers to just give us more information on the precise ways of the claiming of a VAT on these commercial vehicles, Jay. Just a broad space, because I mean, I'm not a researcher, I'm just a politician, but it would assist all of us if we know exactly how the VAT system works on these vehicles, Jay.
All right. I think they are all here. They will see what is possible. And whether later would include SARS as a stakeholder, that will determine later as we go on. So thank you very much, Honorable McD, that is noted. Colleagues, thank you very much. The meeting stands adjourned. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Long live the chair.
I wanted to ask if this is only for Honorable McD. I shouldn't long live. Thank you, colleagues. Bye.